Whether you're handy or all thumbs, you're listening to the Home Improvement Show, CJAD 800.
Saturday morning, and it means that it is time for a visit from our friendly home improvement expert, Walter Assey, president of Renofco. Walter, how are you?
I heard that's your favorite time of the show.
Listen, it is Dear Diary. It's my appointment. I love it. I love it because I also, this is a world that's new to me. So I have many questions, like the listeners. We're going to get to the questions. Reminder, 514-800. Send those questions in. Also, 790-0800, 790-0800, of course, 514-790-0800. We already have a question. We got to get to it. This is very interesting for me. This is Mike from Longueuil, because this is not the first time people ask you about this, the bathroom fan. Mm-hmm. It seems to be a pickle. It says, hi, I'm having a bathroom fan installed. It will be vented out of the side of the house, which has a flat roof. Is it okay to use a semi-rigid dryer duct? And should the vent be with movable louvres? Am I saying that right? Mm-hmm. I think I'm saying it the French way. Louvres. Yeah. I'm saying it the French way. Have a screen. This is, comes from Mike from Longueuil.
So the quick answer to this would be no.
Okay. no.
Just
the
to
end.
Kind of simplify it. What you want to do is you want to have an insulated duct in the attic. That's to start with. Because if you don't, then you're going to have condensation. And that's what you don't want to have in an attic. And that's how you're going to be having all kind of mold issues and water stains and even water damage when the condensation becomes serious. When you're going to be exhausting the duct through your soffit, or sorry, through the side of the house, one of the things that is totally ignored and is totally wrong is, yes, you have to put the fan is in operation and to shut when the fan is not, so you don't have any backdraft and water and air and cold air and what have you. But what's even more important would be to secure about 3 feet of this area to avoid the backdraft of the condensation to go back into your attic. Okay, so when you're going to install your clapet, the important thing is you have to block about a foot and a half from, that will be your minimum requirement, don't go a lot over that because you don't want to block your soffits, on either side of the clapet, and that way you avoid backdrafts. You don't want the condensation to go through your soffits and, you know, create also other issues. So on a windy day, if you have your fan on and you're taking a long shower, all that condensation going to blow back into through your soffits into your attic. So that's one of the things that I would just be careful from. Insulated duct all the way. That's pretty much the rule. Make sure that the installation, when you install it, that the duct have a slope towards the outside, because you don't want to have that banana effect by which the condensation gets stuck there and then you have other issues, or you don't want it to be a negative slope towards the fan. You're going to have the condensation through the fan and you're going to have droplets falling on your head.
The droplets. Ew, doesn't sound good. 514-790-0800. Send your questions into Walter Assey. 514-800 is the text line as well. Walter, you came in here and you said we have to talk about mold.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So the thing, when I was a young reporter starting out, they would send me to do these stories. You'd go into these apartment buildings and, you know, the landlords were being sued because they would just paint over mold, sort of the quick fix. You're saying, let's ring the alarm bells. This is not where you cheap out. You don't paint over mold. You take care of mold.
You know, it still amazes me how ill-informed some people are about mold and how lightly they take it. You know, Health Canada have on their website a whole section about it, so you could read up if you want to really get well informed about it,
or scared, which you should be see mold.
Knowledge is a good thing, mm-hmm. and sticking your head in the sand is very bad. There's nothing good that can come out of mold if you ignore it. That's pretty much the rule. You have a flood, you have a water damage, and we've seen a lot of these in the last ice storm. Unfortunately, most of these floods happened in basements. And most people don't take the time to read through their insurance policy. So they were all either not insured or very underinsured. So a lot of people skimmed out on what needs to be done. And now they're starting to pay the price for that. So we get the calls of, you know, people having bad smells, they having some, you know, medical issues, and so on and so forth. And we go see them and they have, you know, had a flood 2 years ago and their whole basement flooded and they did nothing about it. Well, number one thing is the colony of mold will keep on growing. So there's, if you think you saved money, you're really not saving money. Number two, your air quality in the house is going to become extremely hazardous for you eventually, if it's not now. So health-wise, you're not going to get any better. And there is this misconception, because mold is an invisible, right? It's microscopic fungi, so meaning you don't see it.
Mm-hmm.
So that gives you the false sense of security. And our respiratory system, our lungs, are really made to take some form of abuse. So basically when, you know, when you see mold and you are next to it and you're breathing it, it's not like right away you're going to feel sick. It's not smoke or anything like that. It's spores that go down through your respiratory system. Your respiratory system is made to filter everything down to 5 microns in size. A micron is 1 millionth of a meter. So your respiratory system is really not engineered to stop most of the species of the mold spores, meaning that the spores will go straight to your lungs and they will have no else to go. And then your lung realizes they're not supposed to be there, so it seals it on the outer layer of the lung. You keep on exposing your lung to different forms and species of mold on a daily basis. Well, you know what? Eventually, it's going to kick back. And that's talking about the mesophilic mold. There are more aggressive type of molds, which are the hydrophilic ones. And these typically happen later in the process, okay? Typically when you have a water damage or a flood or what have you that is not properly remediated, the first responders are the mesophilic type molds. And these guys, they don't require a very high water table. So these guys, they just, you know, kick in right away and what have you. The hydrophilic molds, they come 7 to 14 days after the fact, okay? They require a higher water table. So typically what happens in this case, when they start arriving and forming in different colonies, it's much harder to get rid of them because they don't aerosolize as
like they're easy. They're there at that point. They're there to stay unless you bring in the professionals. I think one of my questions, because it's such a big topic, is it costly? I know it's going to be costlier to wait to do it, but when you have the flood damage, should the instinct be okay? I have to get this checked out now. And is it a costly affair to remedy?
So I'm going to give you a good rule of thumb where you save a lot of money. Mold will happen, usually will occur, the activity of mold growth usually will occur 24 to 48 hours after a flood.
So fast.
So if you are within that window, chances are you've saved yourself a lot of money. And not only that, like when we get calls about mold, for example, about floods or water damage, we come in with drying machines to minimize the loss. So we do openings, strategic openings. You bring in specialized equipment.
You're not tearing at a wall. It's all pinpointed.
Well, in most cases, we don't have to.
Fingers crossed.
But again, we have to really be called. Like it has to be, you know, it happened and right away you reacted. If you call me a week later, that's not going to be the case.
Walter Assi again, 514-800 is the text line, 790-0800. I see the calls that have started to come in. We're going to get to Edward in just a bit, but it is 9:15.
You might just need to tighten the thingamajig on the whatchamacallit. This is the Home Improvement Show on CJAD 800.
The thingamajig on the whatchamacallit is one way to look at it. Another way to look at it is that Walter Assi has all of the answers to your questions. Again, 514-800-790-0800. If you have questions on home improvement, if you have a concern about something that's going on in your house, he is here for that. Edward is on the phone right now. Edward from Montreal North. Edward, you have a question about a roof change and the membrane. Take it away, Edward.
Yes, a friend recommended that we should go with the membrane. So I would like to know from him which one. It's, at the moment, it's asphalt. So I would like to know which one is better.
Okay. Do you have a flat roof?
Yes.
Okay. And it's like a, what, it's like a duplex or?
Yeah, duplex. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So, I mean, you have now tar and gravel. And how old is your roof now?
It's about 13 to 14 years now.
And it's already due?
No.
To be changed? You need to change it already?
No, no, no. I need to change it. So maybe we are planning to change it in July.
Okay. Is there a reason you're changing it that fast? Because typically, even a tar and gravel roof should have a shelf life of at least 20 years. Do you know what happened there?
No, up to what? 20 years?
Because usually a tar and gravel roof,
yes.
A 13-year lifespan is short for a tar and gravel roof. Did anything happen that you're obliged to change it now? Did you have it checked by somebody, or is it leaking?
Yeah, last time, the guy who did it, we went to him. He came to inspect it and gave us about 2 years more you should change it. But this time, the company is no more. So I can't, I have to maybe find another person to come and inspect it for us.
Okay. Well, you're going to do me a little favor. You're going to have another opinion if the roof is not actively leaking or you don't have any leak at all. Because I find 13 years way too short for a flat roof.
Okay.
Having said that, I'm just going to go over certain things that we look for in a tar and gravel roof or in a membrane roof. The big issue you have with tar and gravel is you are completely reliant on the honesty of the roofer.
Okay.
Okay? Because they're selling you plies. So they say tar and gravel roof, I'm selling you 3-ply, 4-ply, 5-ply, up to 5 plies usually.
Okay.
And there's no, unless you're there 8 hours per day with them working the whole duration of the job, there's no way for you to really know if they did 3-ply or 5-ply.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And that is important because that's what determines the lifespan of your roof. So you could have 13 years ago, for example, paid for a 5-ply roof, but the guy only gave 3-ply and you have no way of knowing.
Okay.
Okay. So that's where a tar and gravel roof becomes a bit tricky. Mm-hmm. Okay, you really need to have an honest roofer. That's number one. Number two is the fact that it's tar. So the biggest enemy of tar, believe it or not, is the sun. So mm-hmm. to put tar on a roof is kind of, you know, weird because you can say, well, fine, if any time the sun is gonna hit that tar, it's going to crack and it's going to create all kind of damages.
Yeah.
So what happens is we put gravel on top.
Yes.
But the issue with the gravel is with wind and storms, it moves. So every year you would have to go up a couple of times and make sure that the gravel is well spread again and nothing flew off. And, you know, in some cases you would need to add gravel and so on and so forth. And that becomes a bit challenging, okay? Mm-hmm. The other thing that I don't necessarily like about tar and gravel roofs is if you ever have a water damage or a water infiltration,
yes,
it's very hard to pinpoint the area where it's coming from, okay? Because what happens, the water could be coming 10 feet away following a certain slope and, for example, leaking in your living room,
mm-hmm.
but the real issue is above your kitchen, okay? So that's going to be an issue. That's going to be a real issue if you're going to, have to pinpoint a water damage in the future.
Okay.
Elastomeric roofs are my favorite, okay? And the reason being is, pretty much, you don't have to use, obviously, the gravel.
Okay.
And especially if you go with the white roofs, they reflect the sun, so that elongates the shelf life of the roof. And if you ever have a water damage,
yes. You
can pinpoint right away where the area is coming from, because usually it balloons, it bubbles. You see that, you know, there's something that in the membrane that is not right, wrong overlap. What you could also do is a thermal imaging in a lot of cases. It's easier to do a thermal imaging because you don't have all these layers to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So the thing that is a bit of a disadvantage is the cost. So it's more expensive than tar and gravel.
Okay.
Okay. But it's the duration. You're going to get a lot more life out of it, and you don't need to maintain it as much.
Okay.
So that's if you want the positive of the 11-stomatic roof. One of the things that's super important is make sure that your roofer is insured for elastomeric roof applications, because that they need a special insurance for that. The reason being, it's an open torch, so there's welding, and there's a risk of fires and so on and so forth. So not every roofer carries that. Some roofers are doing that job. They're extremely brave, if you ask me, and they're not insured for that. So just make sure that you ask for that proof of insurance, if they don't have it, then definitely don't hire that company.
Okay.
I hope that helps you, Edward.
Please, the second question is, I'm at the main floor, but the guy on the top floor, when the water after the toilet, I hear some sound like water leaking, not straight, making with the noise intervals. So I don't know how either to change the whole toilet or something. I don't know. I've been there up once, but I saw it may be condensation. So I don't know whether I should change the toilet straight away, because I hear the sound as if the water is leaking upstairs.
The water is leaking from where?
From the toilet, from the upstairs. But I hear it at our place, that where the toilet is. That means it's coming from the upstairs where the toilet is.
Okay. So there's two spaces where the toilet can leak from. It can leak from around the wax seal, or it can leak from the tank.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Now, from the tank, it's easy to see, because you will see water on the floor or condensation on the tank itself. Okay?
Yeah.
Whereas around the wax seal, you will only see it when you flush. And sometimes you don't even see it, because it seeps into the plywood and then it finds the way downstairs.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here is kind of certain guidelines that are often ignored, because toilets can last for a long time. But the wax seal, they don't. They dry up. So if you want to conserve your toilet because it's working fine, that's good. But if you've, for example, passed the 10-15 year mark,
mm-hmm.
it's time to change your wax seal and like take out the toilet and do it again, regardless if it's leaking or not. Because trust me, if it starts leaking, it's not pretty. It's not, you know, every time you're flushing, it's not really nice water that's coming out.
Okay.
So, you know, there is some maintenance that we should do around toilets. If you're not seeing it visually, that means chances are your wax seal is dried up, and
okay.
now we're having some seepage.
All right, thank you for calling.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
All right, Edward, have a good Saturday.
Okay,
I see
you.
Those questions Bye-bye. Coming in on the text line 514-800-790-0800. Ask Walter anything home improvement related. We should specify.
Yeah, thank you. Marriage counseling.
That's another show. All right, it is, we're heading to 9:30 now. Time now for your CTV News update.
You're listening to the Home Improvement Show on News Talk Radio, CJAD 800.
9:35, and time to ask Walter Assey, president of Renovco, all of your biggest home improvement questions. 514-790-0800. 514-800 is the text line. We've got some coming in for you, Walter. Are you ready?
Born ready.
Nice one. Okay. One that just came quickly in, that's I think we were talking about mold before. Is there a way to test for mold? Because you said earlier that you got to catch it in that first 24 to 48 hours. What's the test? Is it a machine? Do you bring in an expert?
So, yeah, there's multiple ways to look at that. Okay. The when it comes to mold, knowing if it's going to form. So let's say you do have flood or water damage, and you want to know if there's a possibility of mold forming. In this case, you have moisture meters or thermal imaging cameras. The trick is very simple. You have wet material that is porous, that is cellulose-based. Mold will grow at it, on it, if you don't dry it. Okay? If it's dryable, because there are certain materials you can't even dry, like insulation. So that tells you that, okay, in X amount of days, X amount of weeks, you're going to have mold forming on that material. Now, as far as air quality, so let's say you're now fast forwarding into the future and you know that you had a flood at some point and you want to know what happened and what the what are the ramifications due to this, flood, or if it's out of the cavity. Because sometimes, let's example, you have a flood and it affects your subfloor and all the water and the gunk is underneath your subfloor. So the mold is there. We know it's there. But have the mold now found its way into the air that you're breathing? Okay, so there is a way to know that as well. It's pretty much an air quality test. So you have a machine. It sucks the air for about 5 minutes. It's like a cartridge, and then you send it to a lab, and then the lab not only tells you the amount of mold spores that you have, but the type of spores, which is important. Now, how do you know what's normal and not normal? Because some people tell you, oh, but there's mold out in the air outside and what have you. It's true, but there are certain species of mold on the outside in certain times of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Cladosporium, for example, is a very common spore outside in the exterior. We find it due to the action of decay from the leaves and what have you. So in this case, you have a standard test, which is the exterior. We test the exterior. We see what are the species that are in the exterior versus the interior. And then you do a competitive chart of what is in your home that is not outside. That's not normal. And then even what's outside and what's in your home, you do a comparative check of the number of spores. So let's say you have a certain presence of penicillin outside and it's 50 spores, but in your house it's 20,000. That means your air quality is really bad.
Yeah, that's a problem there. Okay, so there are different tests available. I hope that answers that question. We have a question now that says on the text line 514-800, by the way, reminder, 790-0800 is the phone number. Questions for Walter Assey. This one says, good morning. I hope you're doing well. We are. Thank you. My name is Patricia and I live in Pierrefonds. Last summer, I had a standby generator installed and need to have soundproofing for it. Would you know of a company that could safely soundproof or silence my standby generator, or how can this be done? Thank you in advance, she says.
I mean, I do. It depends on the generator itself. One of the companies that I would recommend is a company that does also maintenance on mostly Generatec-type generators, and they're called Gen Guardians. So they do installs, but they also do maintenance, which is good. You could start with these guys and they could give you, you know, a run through of what kind of model you could install and things to dampen the noise and what have you. And for those who are buying new generators, extremely important that you shop for ones that are with silencers or they're silent, because they can get to be very noisy.
Yeah. Okay. I hope that helps you out, Patricia, in Pierrefonds. Okay. This is an interesting one. Do home insurance companies have time limits on redoing a roof?
Okay. That's a good question. Now, when it comes to insurance companies, obviously it varies from company to company and coverage to coverage. A lot of the, if you are in a certain level home, usually you get inspections, and they could just decide at the renewal stage or right before the renewal to come and send an inspector. if the inspector comes and they see that your roof is old, well, they're going to give you 30 days to do it, or you're not insured for roof damage, or they might just cancel your policy in certain cases, right? So they are calculating risk.
Mm-hmm.
Don't wait for someone to nudge you to, because you don't know what's going to come out of it. And the last thing you want is to go shop for a roofer in the next 30 days and find one that is good, that's going to do the work. Because they're going to, you know, they're going to understand that you are in a
dire straits.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And they're going to charge for it, right? So there are certain, you know, just be preemptive for your own home. Like, don't think insurance necessary all the time. Because we have to be very careful. When you have a claim, and the claim is gradual damage, okay, you're not covered. So if they come in
and explain that to me. So basically, if it's like force majeure, something happens, you can claim. But if it's, you should have known over time, is that what you're saying?
So example, they open up your subfloor and everything is rotted. That means you've been having that leak for God knows how long. You're not covered. That's called slow gradual leak. Okay.
You're expected to know that.
You were expected or you know, at least you're not expected, but it's a way for them to protect themselves so people do not, you know, allow their homes to rot and then call the insurance and say, you know, renovate my whole house.
Right.
Right. So I can understand the logic. They want people to be proactive and maintain their homes and so on and so forth and not take advantage of the insurance component. So that's why I say be preemptive in what you're doing, because you could pay a price for it.
Okay, we've got John on the line. We'll get to him in just a bit. I do want to get to one last question here on the text line. John, stay on the line because I want to give him the proper time. Again, this is from Pierrefonds. Everyone's texting from Pierrefonds this morning. Hello, Pierrefonds.
Do you guys only have coverage in Pierrefonds today? Like CGV?
Exactly. That we're only broadcasting there. This is from Claudia. She says, I'd like to know what Walter thinks of French drains and if there are alternatives to treating basement walls with mildew or mold. Mold is the subject du jour, I have to say, that have occurred over time with no flooding or other known specific reasons.
Okay. So French drains are important. They function from water damage. And I'm going to explain a bit why. Typically, your home, if it's built in the 60s, 50s, 70s, even 80s, the way they used to membrane it is they would just apply tar on the foundation walls, and that will be, quote-unquote, what allows the cement to be waterproof. But the problem with tar is it degrades and deteriorates over time. So weaknesses will start occurring on your foundation walls. Now, if you have a French drain and then the water goes where the foundation is, it goes all the way down to the footing, and then that water is all channeled away from the foundation. When you don't have a French drain, what you're going to have is water accumulating around your foundation walls and, you know, and finding a weakness somehow and coming in through the foundation wall and creating water damage in your basement. So if you don't have a French drain, your best friend is your landscaping.
Ah.
What you do is you want to ensure your the water is sloped away from the house, minimum 5 feet. So your slope, you have to have a visual slope to see that the water is actually spreading away, going away at least 5 feet from your foundation. Anything less than that, then it will find its way back to your foundation wall somehow.
Water, right?
Yeah, water with hydrostatic pressure is a dangerous thing. You'd be shocked how much water pushes through a tiny crack in your foundation. Because you go on YouTube and see the videos. It's crazy. Because of the hydrostatic pressure, not because of the size of the crack. So that's one. Gutter extensions are important. So what you're doing now is you're channeling as much water away from the house as possible to help.
All right. I hope that answers your question. That was Claudia from Pierrefonds. It is 9:45.
This is the Home Improvement Show on News Talk Radio, CJAD 800.
9:50 Saturday morning. Walter Assey is the man with all of your home renovation answers. 790-0800, 514-800 is the text line there. Before we move on to John, we're getting to you in 1 second, John. We have Robert here. in Ville Saint-Laurent who says, love your show. Would you mind repeating the name of the generator maintenance company, please?
Gen Guardians.
Gen Guardians.
Yeah.
Like the Guardians of the Galaxy. There's, but
the Guardian of the Generator. So
got you.
Gen
got you. John from Bromont has been waiting patiently, and we appreciate it, John. You have a water in the basement issue.
Yes, I have water in my basement, and from the sump pump not working because of a power failure. And I had 2 feet of drip rock removed, baseboards and everything. But I left the foam insulation. Was that okay?
The foam insulation is usually, well, it depends. What kind of water did you get? From the sump pump, you said, right?
Yes, from the pump.
All right. And how fast were you able to get to it, to demolish and dry and disinfect?
10 days to 2 weeks after.
Okay. Did you disinfect the
foam? Yes, I used some spray, some acidic spray. I forget the name of it.
Acidic spray, is that what you said?
Yes.
Okay. Was it particularly for mold?
Yes.
Okay. So, the good news with a foam urethane, if it's closed cells, because there's two different types, open cell and closed cell. If it's closed cell, it is waterproof. So it's good as long as we don't have any pockets behind it where the water is still pooling.
Okay.
What I'm saying is, your urethane, if it have any gaps at the bottom and water found its way either under the 2x4, under the 2x4 and kind of as pooled somewhere behind the wall, then that becomes an issue because you're not really getting to that. It's very rare, but it could occur in certain cases. And that's why, if you're building new basements, I know Mr. McDonald, who have an invention called TechSill, always wants me to talk about it. It's good because what that does is it gives the 2x4, if you want a gap between the concrete and the 2x4, so if there's any water that goes there, it kind of have a way to come back out again. In your case, if you did the disinfection, you allowed the drying time, you had machines and blowers, there's a very good chance that you're okay. It's just make sure. I don't know if you've had any blowers or dehums to
no,
dry the structure.
No, any blowers installed.
You did not have, or you did?
No, did not.
Okay. I mean, the good practice usually is after you do the openings, before you close the walls, you want to put commercial dehums because you want to make the area very, very dry. And you put blowers on the materials just to make sure that even the 2x4s that were not ripping out are dried before we close the walls. If they stay moist, then just the wood itself will start creating for you mold, even though it's made to be resistant. But 2x4s in a case, for example, because we get asked this all the time, why do you have to dry the 2x4 when we're building the house? You know, it rains on it and we don't have to dry it every time. Absolutely true. But the only difference is when you close it with drywall, it's not breathing anymore. So there's nothing to dry it up. So that's why before the closing, it would be imperative that we do structural drying before.
Does that help you out, John?
One last question.
Sure.
There wasn't any fans to dry everything out, but things have been closed out. Is there anything I could do now? Or should I do anything now?
There's not much you could do now. It would be, to be honest with you, a waste of money to do it now. Just be very mindful of anything you see that is an anomaly in certain cases. Now, chances are you've got most of the basement and you could have had potentially an area that was not addressed, but that will start talking to you, meaning you'll start seeing some staining, you'll start smelling something that shouldn't smell in a certain way, and this will be a telltale sign. Hopefully it's not going to be the case, But again, if you do, then there must be something that, you know, that did not dry adequately before you installed it.
Well, thank you very much.
My pleasure.
All right, that was John from Bromont again with an issue with water in the basement. Walter, is preventability key here at this point? You know, it's spring. Is this the moment where we should be doing a check of some sort on our basement? And if so, what? Because I feel like mold is the issue du jour here.
I mean, look, anything that caused you water damage is an issue that you have to definitely address. It doesn't matter how small it is. Like, you could have a mortar brick that is cracked and just 3 inches long. Well, you know what? It's going to bring in water. So don't ignore it, especially with directional rain, with wind, and so on and so forth. And when you have a major occurrence in your home, I know there's a lot of DIY people. If you don't have the training for it, at least ask, okay? And don't necessarily always go just on Dr. Google, because, you know, you're going to have 100 different opinions with 20 of them that are not the right answer, right?
Well, I always say you wouldn't fix your own teeth. So use that for, I mean, call the dentist, call Walter Assey. Question that just came in. Good morning. Can you recommend a good, reliable roofer? My roof on my duplex needs some work. I guess that's what was trying to be written there.
Yeah. If we're going to do that, we'll probably do it off air, just because I want to piss off all the other roofers. and it's true. It's right to ask this question because, you know, not every roofer is a good one. And I don't have a long list of people to refer usually, to be honest, because I'm extremely careful, especially when it comes to roofers.
So the people you trust are limited, is what you're saying.
Extremely limited. You can literally count them on two fingers.
All right. Walter Assey, president of Renovco. Thank you so much for taking the time. Thank you for your calls and your text messages. He'll be back, of course, next Saturday to keep you informed on all of the latest in home improvement. That's it for us. Don't go anywhere. Your CTV News update is coming right up.